This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's after show. I've been trying to start this with a little bit more education. If you don't know what we do on the show, we basically help you guys. We've been doing this 7 years. We help you guys 4 shows a week. We help anyone who's interested in health and fitness that wants to kind of bust through some of the myths, get better at their training, eat better, fix injuries. We help you just learn that sort of stuff. And we've been doing it for the last, 6, 7 years. We also run gyms. If you guys are just tuning in for the first time, you know that. So that's why on Friday we do a business show. So if you're ever interested in like starting your own gym, learning about growing gyms, if you are starting as a PT, if you're an employee, if you're in the fitness industry at all, if you make money from it in any way, online, offline, we provide value there as well. On Thursdays, we do a show where we help you guys understand specific training or nutrition topics. Wednesday, we're going to shoot the shit, which is what we're doing today, the after show, and then Monday, always doing an interview. And pushing the envelope right now with trying to fit it all in around the new gym. But that is, I think, where I think we owe the listeners probably the start of where we've been at is kind of the last 2 months of Locker Room. That's it. We've officially hit the 2 month mark, really ended the first quarter. We've started paying rent now. How do you feel like it's gone so far?
Well, it's been an interesting start. So for people that haven't followed as much, we've probably had 1 month of training clients now, probably 1 month of I guess pre-sale, 1 month of training clients. And we haven't like done an official hard launch, more of a soft launch. And it's been really interesting. I mean, the first week or two, the gym did feel pretty dead, and it's evolved. Everyone started to get to know each other. We've obviously been signing on tons of really good new clients, and now it's just starting to hit that point where, you know, after nearly a decade of running gyms, where you know a gym's starting to get a bit of momentum, where like people are getting into their second training cycle. You got people that were referred to by someone else because they thought it was really good, and they're in the sessions now, and now they're experiencing it, and you start to get that is the momentum of a gym, and it builds on itself, and if you like. You know, you water it, it's like a plant. You like water it right, fertilize it, it starts to grow. And we are still in the very, very early stages of that. But that started to grow. I think the best thing about the gym has really been we signed on 20 clients. We've accepted 20 clients. The first 10 we kind of already knew. So there's no surprises there.
Yeah.
Most of the second 10 we'd never met before. And they've just been great people to meet. It's probably been the highlight for me so far is we have met some pretty extraordinary individuals joining the gym. And the best part is I know I'm going to really get to know them. I'm going to see them like every single day in the gym. So yeah. That has been like pretty special and pretty different to some of our other experiences in the gym. You know, first time we opened the gym, we were full of Groupon members.
Yeah.
50 Groupon members.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with them, but no one was there to develop a great relationship. You know, I wasn't interested in training that much. They were interested in learning from me. They was interested in getting this crazy deal and getting out of there in 3 weeks. So that has been probably the best part of it so far.
Yeah, I think it's been a real interesting switch up of environments. You know, having gone from, you know, the industrial park of the inner city, which is, you know, it's got its own character, it's got its own flavor, it's very different. That's where we kind of all started. And now it's like we have gone through the eastern suburbs all the way to, and like, you know, the east is, it's got its own benefits and perks, and but it is very different to where we are now. We've landed in basically the northern financial district of the city, which is, if you know anything about the Sydney CBD, it's like the most expensive real estate. Barangaroo is kind of up there as well, but it's...
Not compared to where we are.
Yeah. But Barangaroo is mostly the banks. But yeah, the area that we're in is like, it's pretty upper class. It's pretty interesting walking around in activewear and everyone is in a suit. Everyone's in a suit. You're just sticking out like a sore thumb. But no, it's been a great experience. And I think what you realize with these people, these clients that you work with, and you know, it's a good lesson for anyone that I guess maybe doesn't know anyone in their life that is, you know, a CEO of a massive company or a founder, a director, a partner of, you know, some massive firm or organization, is they're just normal people. They're just people like you and me, but they do everything a little bit. They're a little bit more committed. They're a little bit more driven. They push themselves a little bit harder. They don't let themselves make excuses. They don't bitch about things because, you know, they know what it's like every day to get up and have to go to war and battle and fight and, you know, go through the highs and lows that not everyone will experience in their professional career. Yeah, everyone goes through highs and lows, but there's a lot more on the line for these sorts of guys. So what I love about working with them is that, you know, when you tell them to do something, they're a lot more likely to get it done.
Yeah, and what's great about it is everyone's different in what they enjoy. And like I've worked with kids for fitness in the past, and that's great. You like it's an enjoyable process, but you don't learn that much from the kids.
Yeah.
Obviously, right? You're more teaching, which is great. But what I love about this, I think I would recommend it for a lot of people if you're coming your way up in fitness, you're obviously younger, is if you can pick a client that is generally older than you and you would love to learn from, I think you'll enjoy it a lot more and it can help you get ahead more quickly. Because the switch we've made is, our gyms service a lot of clients that were probably similar age to us a little bit more in the past. And now nearly every client's older than me.
Yeah.
Probably maybe a good 10-year delta.
Yeah.
At least. And has stuff that I'd really love to know about, areas of their life that I'd love to improve in. So I know that's not for everyone, but I think if you are in some sort of service industry, that is a good change to make. Even if you're like a barber, if you're cutting the hair of someone you're so excited to spend half an hour with, that can be an upgrade to your life.
Yeah. Well, when I spoke to my barber, who this new barber in the city, is he was saying, because there's this place called Culture Kings, right, where you can go buy shoes, but you can also get your hair cut. And I go, oh, would you ever cut somewhere like that?
Is that the hat store and all?
You can
get your hair cut in it.
Yeah. So they do all the fades and stuff there. And I go, oh, would you ever cut that? And he goes, well, look, I can cut hair anywhere. He goes, but the difference is what is the level of conversation that I'm having? And he goes, I like to have a level of conversation that's more sophisticated. And it's not that, those guys at Culture Kings, it's bad conversation. It's just not for him, right? It's just young dudes that just want to talk about picking up chicks and driving cars or whatever, right? So that is kind of how I relate to it a little bit if you're going to be spending time with clients on the floor, and you and I won't be coaching here forever, but for this short period of time, we are coaching again, and we're spending a lot of face-to-face time with the clients. Yeah, you want to have, conversation that you feel like you're going to benefit from as well. Hey, here's my knowledge in health and fitness, how I can help you. Here's some motivational stuff, and then trade for, his business advice, his what I've done, that sort of thing. So it's good. I think it's a nice balance.
And for anyone that's worked in a regular job where you just got lots of people around you, like a bigger business or whatever, and you got tons of employees, I always found in my experiences that was the biggest thing. It was how enjoyable was the conversations, not about work,
right,
with the other people. And if they just killed you, you just couldn't last there.
It was
not fun.
Yeah, exactly. So a few little things that I'd say, the gym's probably 90% of the way there. A few little things we want to fix up. We've got to drill some thing in, change some other things around, order a few bits and pieces of equipment still to come in, but most of the way there. I think that when you get most of the way there, you're just always, I don't know if I'll ever cure that ability to go that could be a little bit better. That can be a little bit better. Even as small things come in, you just want to fix them, make them better, clean them up, fix this, fix that. So it's just, I guess, part of being a little bit OCD. But anyway, slight temperature change at the moment, a little bit cooler in the mornings, a little bit sunnier, warming up a little bit, but nothing really breaking sort of 22, 23 degrees. Man, it seems to put people down. Slight temperature changes, I notice, make people sick all the time.
Sydney's weak.
That's what I thought.
Australia is weak.
Yeah. I never get sick on a temperature change, ever. I know you do sometimes, but I don't get that. I don't get how that, do you reckon it's just the exposure to the temperature or the lack of exposure to extreme temperatures and that shift, the body's just not ready for it?
I think it's more that most people that live in a big city are so close to being sick at all times because they're just not very well. It's because you think about it, oh man, when I go on holiday, I always get sick.
Yeah.
When the temperature is it's a strong breeze.
And you get sick.
And you're sick. And I really think it's because, we put whoops on our client stuff. Most people, sleep's bad, food's not great. Or if they train hard, they're often, training on the edge of overtraining, whatever it is. Most people live somewhere on the edge of being unwell or too much fitness. So most people are just not that resilient.
Yeah.
And then you get really resilient people that are eating really well, good amount of training, haven't been sick in 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was interesting. I always noticed this. So slight temperature change and all of a sudden 5-6 people, I'm sick, I can't do this, do that. I'm like, fuck, man.
I think it's exponential though, right? Because a temperature change might get a few percent sick, but then they spread it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. Spread it into the household.
Spread it to everyone. Yeah. And then really quickly, you
kid gets sick. Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Okay. So I think we should probably give an update on 75 Hard. So I am a day. So I actually got his book, his 75 Hard book, and I read through the book.
I didn't do that because I was listening to a podcast the day before we started trying to prepare for it.
Yeah.
He was read the book when you're at day 50.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it actually matters.
I could see why, because he talks about the different stages of, but he does lay out the rules a little bit more clearly for some people. But anyway, I'm at day 25 today. If I had remembered that progress photo, I'd be day 30, day 31. But so far, so good. I think it's, like we said, it's easy when it's easy. And then it's very hard on some certain days at certain times. For example, this morning. I knew I had a long day of things. And I think that what it forces you to do is you don't have time to just be like, oh, I'll fit training in later. Mm.
It's not that, with two separate sessions.
Exactly. And not with one of them having to be outdoors. Mm. So what I've found is I guess I have a little bit more anxiety throughout the week about planning my day because it needs to be very organized and very scheduled to fit everything in. And so, for example, you know, tomorrow I'm thinking, okay, what's on for tomorrow? Usually I just kind of know, okay, I'll wake up in the morning, I'll look at my calendar and I'll make it my way through the day. Now I'm noticing that the day before I have to look at my day and I have to go, do I need to move this around? Am I going to fit it in here? Where's my gap to do the outdoor workout? Where's my gap to do the indoor workout? All this sort of stuff. But when it's well planned and, you know, you're ahead of time, and I think this is just a great principle that I'm figuring out for everything in life. When you plan ahead, very hard to make errors. Like you're much more, and I'm not talking about weeks in advance. I'm just talking about, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours in advance, just looking ahead going, okay, that works. Need to move this around, fix this here, because the schedule is getting a lot tighter now. And as long as it's planned, it's hard to miss it. And the same goes for like the water, same goes for the reading. Like you got to put everything in the calendar to figure it out.
Well, I think that's why people get depression after they finish competitive sports. When you have competitive sports, that is how it was like. You know, you get yourself an itinerary because you got so much. Like you got meals, you got programs, everything. And you run it and then you just get into like regular life. And you're like, oh, I'll just see how we go.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just no winging it anymore. Because if you miss that slot to get the reading in or you miss that slot to get the workout in, you know it's coming later.
Winging it with health and fitness sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really, really does suck. Pre-planning is like so much better. And that, I think it's one of the best things you get out of training really hard, you know, even when you don't need to.
Mm.
You just try and train really hard for a while. You try and do like double days, fit it into your schedule. Like, yeah, it forces you to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of training too hard, so one of the outdoor sessions this week, I got a little bit excited. I was like, all right, well, I've done a bit of slow running in preparation for this marathon coming later in the year. Why don't I do more of a sprint session? Because I'm like, oh, I haven't really like opened up the stride in a while and done a bit of sprinting. And you can tell, right? Because when some of the boys get on the treadmill, some of the guys that do more long running and some of the guys that do more sprinting, you can tell when the guy hasn't opened up his stride in a while, it shows, right? It's like, it's like, okay, can you speed up here? Yeah. You look very slow. But I see why, right? Every time you run, the default is this short, you know, fast cadence. But anyway, so I thought I'd open up the stride a little bit. And so I went to the park, went to the field, like an oval, like a soccer field. And I did halfway, back, like shuttle, full length and back, building over this thing. So like 60%, 70%, 80% sprint back. And I think what's interesting when you've done a whole thing of CrossFit and before we did CrossFit in when we're training just normal normal sports, you don't think about running. You never think about running technique unless you actually did athletics where you were coached on sprinting. But getting into CrossFit, you work on every aspect of movement. You bring awareness to every single thing that you're doing. And so now when I'm sprinting, I'm thinking about arm position. I'm thinking about, you know, foot contact, you know, trying to minimize ground contact time in the sprint, like opening up the stride, like reaching out in front, like driving the arms, all these sort of things. And so I think what I'm doing is I'm doing this very strange sprinting technique because I'm trying to correct it as I'm sprinting. But it's interesting because as I correct it, I don't actually know. I mean, I was sort of timing it, but I was getting faster, which is if you just sprint and you just think to yourself, sprint, there's only so fast you can go. But if you're sprinting and you're cueing yourself technique, no, drive my arms harder, reach out a bit more on this stride, stay light, I noticed I was actually getting faster, which is a very strange feeling because, I mean, you think you're at top speed.
Mm.
You think you're at full sprint because your intensity's up there. But what you're not doing is you're not cueing your technique. So I started cueing my technique. But anyway.
Then you pulled your hamstring.
No, I pulled something in my knee.
Yeah, my knee was coming.
My knee is...
I knew some injury was coming at this point. I was running faster than ever.
My fucking knee. I can't like straighten my leg out properly. Yeah, so I was like walking.
When was this?
So this was on Tuesday, I think. So I was down at the park sprinting. And then I went to... I cooled down. I did a walk. I sat down. I did some stretching. And then I got up. My calf started cramping. So I went down, stretched out the calf. And then later that day, as I was... No, the next day, my outdoor workout was I got the backpack, loaded it up and went for a walk. And something happened. And as soon as I was like 5 minutes into the walk, I just couldn't straighten my leg out. Like I couldn't, I can't stand, you know how you stand on your leg and you kind of lean to one side and one leg straight, yep. you know, just like shifting side to side, just how normal people stand. Can't stand on my right leg. It's fucked. Don't know what it did. It's like sharp shooting pain in the like right side. Honestly, I think it does feel like one of those ones though that will just go away. That's what I'm hoping.
Mm. Usually yeah. those sprinting injuries, they do because as long as you don't sprint.
Because 8 times the force when you're at max yeah. sprint, right?
I think it gets up to more when you're like decelerating.
Yeah, right. It's a lot. You don't think about 8 times your body weight force through the leg.
Yeah, when it's you're crazy. Sprinting.
Because like obviously, yeah, when you're walking, it's one pretty much 1-to-1, right? When you're jogging, wait, 1, 2, maybe 3, yeah. and then as that speed really picks up, as you're like full flight, yes.
I think decelerating and changing directions like even exponentially more.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of sad that, you know, I can't do one sprint session without getting injured, but I can see why you need to like build it up. But yeah, anyway, so I thought it was just interesting. But
well, I remember when I used to do sprint training. Every school would be like 45-minute session, whatever, and you would sprint for like, I don't know, 30 seconds in total,
yeah.
maximum out of 45 minutes.
All technique,
yeah, and drills? Like warm ups and drills. It's like the whole session is drills.
Mm. You do it on the track,
yeah, on the track.
Yeah.
We go to like AS Marks, like you have a proper track, and you do your sprint session. But yeah, I would say that's like a normal session. You're out there for like nearly an hour, and it's definitely less than half a minute of running all out.
Sprinting.
That is like the ratio.
Yeah.
When you're actually training it.
Well, I took a long rest in between because as soon as, if you start hitting that 90% sprint
minutes
power.
Rest, yeah.
Yeah, like you just, and you do the next one, you can't sprint. Like you're so fatigued, yeah. What is the time between, like when they run the 100 meters at the Olympics, they do two heats and then a semi and a final.
Yeah, you got plenty of rest.
Yeah, but it's like, isn't it days in between?
Yeah, I think between some of them, it can be morning and afternoon.
Yeah.
But like the final 100 meters, always a different day, I think, to the semifinal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they need that. You say
isn't that crazy? It's like you're running a 10-second race, you're on 10-second effort, and you're like days in between rests. That's probably the highest amount of rest per amount of work, right? Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, because weightlifting is a lot, but you've got 6 lifts on the day.
Yeah, but if you do one clean and jerk, it can take more than 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, like you get catch on the bottom, bounce around, reset, true. Like it's a 10-second lift.
Yeah.
But also, you're going to
do 6 of them.
Exactly. Yeah, you're going to have 6 attempts.
Hopefully 6.
So, yeah, it would be the sport in the Olympics with the shortest amount of work time, the 100-meter sprint. And I guess you would say, though, okay, but they're also running your 200, these guys, as well, and they're probably running your relay, so it's adding up. Yeah. But still, the 100-meter event would be the shortest event in terms of total work time and resting in between the heats.
Yeah.
Because in a weightlifting, they do it all in one day, right? Yeah. Yeah, you do all your lifts. That's it, done.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you don't come back and no. That's it.
Yes. But there's no like you only do your 6 lifts. You don't like do semis and finals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you just do your 6. But yeah, it's interesting. It is interesting. I do miss the Olympics. I hope it comes back. Are they going to have it this year?
I don't think it's going to happen this year.
Not going to happen? Tokyo. It is happening.
No, I know it's Tokyo. I didn't think Tokyo was going to happen this year.
They're going to get rid of it.
Oh, I think they're going to push it again to another year. They're really trying to get it this year. I think that's like a TV rights thing or whatever. It just doesn't look likely.
But they
need to come from all around the world.
Yeah. Will they push it on a 4-yearly cycle then still? Or will they...
I think they'll go like, 2 years. Like it'll be back to back.
Oh, so they'll go 2022, 2024.
Yeah.
Really?
You can't... like, you know, these countries have planned this 12 years ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
True. Can't be like, just stop the construction.
Well,
it's crazy. And what I think it'll mean is that you'll get like way more people than for a very long time win at both Olympics.
Yeah. I'll see you in 2 years.
That's very rare. Because you'll be at top of your game 4 years later, right? That's so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Like Matt Fraser won 5, but if he was in the Olympics, he only would have won 2.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But with this, yeah, I think you'll see way more people break records of like 2 or 3 golds. Because you can win 3 golds in 6 years.
Do you think, okay, so what do you think the most unpopular sport in the Olympics would be? Do you think it would be, if they put CrossFit in the Olympics, it would be the most unpopular sport in the Olympics?
And I always hear about stupid sports in the Olympics, but I don't even know if I'm getting like trolled or not.
Yeah.
I think it would be.
Boxing. Would you want, no, boxing. Boxing is popular.
No.
Do you think...
Boxing, I think, is a huge sport worldwide.
Massive.
Yeah.
Massive. Why do you think Floyd Mayweather is one of the most highly paid athletes in the world? It's because...
Because an entertaining Instagram account.
Yeah, but but seriously, like I think that
skateboarding is very popular. That got in the Olympics.
No, skating's way more popular than CrossFit. No, I think CrossFit, if it was in the Olympics, would be the most unpopular sport.
Yeah, it'll never get in the Olympics though.
Yeah,
I'm looking through.
They're trying to get it in there though.
Wait, is synchronized swimming? That's not a sport.
Yeah, it's a sport.
Synchronized swimming.
Yeah, it's a sport.
No, synchronized diving is a sport.
No, synchronized swimming. Yeah, it's a sport.
They're racing. What?
No, 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 no. Like they're doing like a dance. They're doing like a coordinated dance.
That's
like
a sport.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 10 girls in or 10 guys in a pool or whatever. It's a mix. I'm not sure. I've never watched it, but they do like dancing and
canoeing?
Flipping and... Canoeing and CrossFit, that'd be a battle for last place.
What is the modern pentathlon?
That's 10 events. So that's like shooting, 400 meter.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually.
Javelin, high jump. Yeah, that's kind of like what the CrossFit thing is like.
Trampoline has a huge, you know, 3 to 5 year old fan base. we had a good trampoline once, an Aussie guy.
Oh,
2000s,
really?
Yeah. Jumping Jack.
Okay, so we've got last place finish in popularity between CrossFit, trampolining.
I was like 3 year old dude.
And what was the other one?
How does equestrian have 3 sports? That is outrageous. Equestrian, dressage, eventing, and jumping.
Bro, rich white people want their sport in the Olympics.
To be, you know, people always make fun of this, but in truth, most of the sports here are very legitimate.
Like what?
Like surfing is good. Sports climbing, like I think it's rock climbing.
Yeah.
Like racing up. Yeah, yeah. That's should be a sport. Like climbing up a wall is like pretty human.
Yeah.
Basketball, baseball, badminton, like they're all good sports.
Yeah. Why are you saying these are not good sports though?
Well, these are like on the list of the least favorite Summer Olympic sports.
Oh, okay.
That's the list I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
I think these are all pretty good sports.
I think it's just
synchronized swimming. I'm questioning.
I think it's just a little bit because you've witnessed these sports all year round so much. So it's like, all right, it's like tennis, right? You watch tennis all year round. It's like a 300 day a year sport. And then they put in the Olympics. You're like, oh, I've seen Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal play like 2 months ago.
You know? I agree. I think the one change they could always make is that the Olympics should be the pinnacle of every sport that's in there. And if it's not the pinnacle, I generally think it's not the best. So like basketball is not the pinnacle.
Why not?
I think it's, I don't know that much about basketball. I assume it's still bigger to win an NBA championship than an Olympics for most
athletes. Oh, no, it's pretty even.
Okay, then that's a bad one. But, yeah. Okay, definitely soccer. Soccer World Cup, soccer, you can't compare it to winning that. No. Right? Rugby Sevens is good because it is the biggest prize in Rugby Sevens. It's not the biggest prize in rugby. Rugby's not in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So I think they made
tennis
that choice
Tennis
would
be one. Tennis, like, no one really... No, I don't think Roger Federer has a gold medal in tennis.
Yeah, like, that's stupid.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't care.
If you can't bother to rock up the Olympics, that's shit. That's really bad. It should always be the pinnacle. And I reckon that's one change they've got to make. It shouldn't put any sports in where it's not.
Yeah.
So skateboarding, like, it should be the biggest win in the Olympics, not the X Games.
Mm. Yeah. I think part of it is because the Olympics in certain sports has, like, maybe more restrictions in how they run it, potentially. And so it's, like, not as hard or it's not as... Because it would, I don't know, I'm not sure. But yeah, no, I agree. It should be like, the pinnacle to win a gold medal in that sport.
They've got a list here of some of the worst sports ever allowed into Olympics. Nearly number one, actually winter sport, was ski ballet, ice skating downhill on skates.
That's sick, bro.
I know, that's awesome.
No, they have that in X Games.
Oh, they kept it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Wait, what do they call it? Ski...
It's like ice skating down a hill.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's crazy.
It's absolutely nuts.
It's psychotic, bro. No, they go so fast down the hill and they smash into each other and shit. It's nuts.
Okay, second worst, plunge for distance. How far you could go underwater. That was in 1904 Olympics.
Ooh, that's good. That's a good one.
But you can't move any limbs. You have to just plunge.
Oh, that sucks.
As far as you can go in 60 seconds.
I thought it was how many laps you could do underwater.
Without moving any limbs. Some guy went 19 meters.
Wait, so what would they do? They would dive in and then they would just float.
The sport didn't require much athleticism at all. Spectators were basically watching someone float in a pool. Needless to say, it didn't last in an Olympic sport.
Imagine winning a gold medal in plunging. The only gold medal is in the plunge. What was it like? Oh, it's so tough. What was the training like? It was incredible.
Third worst in 1984 in the synchronized swimming, which we're already making fun of. They brought in another... competition of it where you could do synchronized swimming by yourself. So you were just synchronized to the music.
Oh, okay. That's fucking stupid.
So it was literally synchronized swimming by yourself. The chick smashed it, won gold twice, and they removed it.
Yeah, honestly, that's got to be one of the... you know what I think is a tough sport is like when there's judging. That's what makes it tough. Yeah. I get it. Like some sports have judging. And it's
like
just,
gymnastics.
Yeah, gymnastics, weightlifting. But judging in that is not like... Yeah, figure skating, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like it would be like bodybuilding. Bodybuilding would not be a good fit.
Yeah.
It's too much politics.
It leaves too much room for controversy. But I mean, that's just kind of how the sport is. The thing is, what you hope for diving as well, what you hope for is when you get to those sports is that there is one clear winner. Like, it's not so close that it's like, oh, he should have got the gold, he was robbed or whatever. It's just so clearly that person was better, that at least that takes out the controversy. Because it's just, in soccer, it's easy, bro. It's just like, cool, you score a goal, the other person didn't score, like, you won. You're the champion. So, it's interesting. Why is soccer not, why is it not the pinnacle?
And the World Cup.
I know the World Cup, but it has all the same teams.
Yeah, but it's the history.
Right.
It would be the, you know, Soccer World Cup's been around too long.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and that, I think that's the problem with it. It's like, that cup is just too sought after.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And maybe there's probably stuff in their contract, like that, you know, because obviously these guys are so valuable.
Yeah, that's usually what happens as well. It's like they don't even send the best players, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what takes away from it.
But it's one of those things that a lot of people in the world have a gold medal. Not many people have a Soccer World Cup trophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's they're both sought after.
Yeah. And they both come around every 4 years.
Yeah. I think if you ran it for long enough, you know, if we'd had soccer in the Olympics for long enough and all the teams, you'd eventually get there.
Mm.
But you can't just overwrite 100 years of our history.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. Okay. So, one thing I want to quickly run through with you, this would be interesting actually while we stay on the sports, is I can't remember what the states were, but you were telling me, say, ban transgender athletes.
Yeah. So, it's a bill going through, so it hasn't been approved yet.
Okay.
I think it started in Florida, but they're basically here. It's not too much detail, but it says they're just, it's a bill to ban transgender athletes from competing in women's sports.
Mm. Yeah, look, I
think that includes, like, it includes college sport, which is probably the main area.
Right.
They're talking about.
Look, I'm going to pick a side here and just say that, yeah, I would agree with this. Look, I mean, it's obviously a complicated issue when someone is a certain gender and then they change their gender. And I don't think this is the podcast, nor am I.
So, what one caveat I'm going to add here.
Yeah.
They will be allowed only if they can show sufficient documentation proving their testosterone levels are below a certain level.
Yeah. Even then, I don't know. I just feel like if you've spent a significant amount of time in your life as a male, you do have some physical advantages that females don't have. And even if you lowered your testosterone and took your weight down a little bit, you still have some advantage there. But yeah, it just doesn't feel right to me. It just feels like cheating in some ways, you know. And I guess it really depends on the person and everything is contextual and it's hard to draw black and white rules for it, but you're going to have to, right? Because if you get this like absolute monster that was 100 kilos step into a boxing ring with a girl and he just has natural power, or she has natural power now because she was a guy for 25 years, it's unsafe, you know, in certain contexts. So, I don't know, maybe different sports need different rules. Maybe like combat sports, it needs to be a full ban because like people's lives are generally at risk. But maybe in other sports, it's, you know, it's not. But then, you know, now we're going down the rabbit hole of how do you decide which sport, you know?
Man, it's definitely a challenge. Mm. I think most people could agree that you have to have some rules. You can't just say open slather. Like, you can't just turn up at an event and be like, which gender would you like to be for this event?
Yeah.
I think nearly everyone could agree that's like
anyone sensible.
Yeah, it's like not going to go well.
Yeah.
If some guy can just jump into the Women's Olympics at the last minute because he didn't qualify for the men's and go, I don't think anyone wants to see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, where you draw the line is hard because, yeah, you'd imagine if you look at all the sports, there's some sports where you'd think you've got to be stricter. Long distance, endurance running almost doesn't matter. Women are like just as good as men.
Yeah.
But when you just, it's still running, but now you only run 100 meters, it really matters.
Yeah.
If you're a guy or a girl or how much testosterone you have. So I think even though it probably can be upsetting, I think it has to be some sort of rule that they put in there. But I imagine because, it matters so differently in different sports, it's hard to put a rule. You know, men still win chess. And it's like, hey, how important is in chess? I don't know. It's not dangerous in any way. But for whatever reason, you know, men are usually better at chess. I'm sure there's a similar example you could have on the female side. But yeah, you got to have some rules. It is a massive challenge, though.
Mm.
Because they want to enjoy sports as well. It's not like they intentionally
cheated. Totally, yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. It's like they should have the right to play sport.
An interesting one was like, I don't feel like Matt Kroc, the powerlifter. He was setting records as a man. He'd become a woman. Obviously, I think he's taken all he was taking drugs previously, definitely.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And I guess he's taking different drugs now. And his lifts have transformed. He's still crazy strong. So I think he was squatting like 350 plus before. He's probably now squatting embarrassing, like more like 200 as a female. It's like still really good numbers, and he competes as a female.
Mm.
But he is very good
as
a female. I don't know how different it would have been if he hadn't had that whole career as a man, like directly before that.
It would be very different. It would be very
But he obviously
different.
Still enjoys competing. So, yeah, it's tough.
I think it would be very different. And there's just, like, you know what it's like. It's training age, right? Like, and it's the level at which your training age you were at. Mm. So, someone's like, yeah, I've done 10 years in the gym, right? And we say, we've done 10 years in the gym. Now, let's both have 5 years off and let's come back in 5 years having done nothing. Us versus the average person who did a little bit of bench press, a little bit of bicep curls, you know, went for a run every now and then. Yeah, we got the same length of time in training age, but the level at which we performed at, our body is so finely tuned. The body has, we have so much stuff on epigenetics and memory cells and bone density, tendon strength, all that stuff.
Even just psychologically, I think, knowing you'd lifted 100 kilos more than this has got to be like, I got this.
Yeah.
I believe I can do this.
Exactly, right? So like the level at which we've tuned our minds to training versus someone who's like, oh yeah, I just kind of always picked up the 10 kilo dumbbells and did curls with them. And it's like, yeah, cool. We tried to like load as heavy as possible on every exercise. We crashed ourselves. We got injured. Like some people just, yeah, we both did 10 years, but you know, your 10 years you were walking, our 10 years, you know, we were sprinting. Mm. And it's just so different. And I think that you just can never take away that. That's put in the bank. That's done. Like there's nothing you can take away from that. So that is an advantage that it's just, I think it's just so unfair in some ways. But obviously, then there's the context where, you know, a guy has changed to a girl and he hasn't done any training previously. He's just existed as a guy and then he wants to play sport, right? And then it's like, okay, well, yeah.
And he might not even be very good.
Exactly.
And then he works really hard. He is good.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that sometimes they are victims of any rule, which sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't, I think in this scenario as well, same thing. I don't think he'll ever be perfect. There'll just be scenarios where it's like, oh, okay.
And it is a challenge. I don't remember, there was a South African runner who like won that gold and she was similar and it was like a never-ending controversy about which gender she was.
Yeah. Is the controversy, I think, is when it's at high-level sports. That's when it's controversial. Yeah. But weekend sports, weekend warriors, no one cares.
Jump in, as long as everyone's safe.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, particularly when it's like financial.
Yeah.
You know, it's like millions of dollars on to be won for this, taken away from other people. And I do think that in the long run, if it was open slather, it would hurt women's sport a lot. Women's sport is hugely on the rise, right?
Yeah.
Across the board in like almost every sport I could think of.
Yeah.
Women's sport is exploding. And I would think that if you let it run too free, I think it would probably hurt the sport.
Yeah. You would know you've made a mistake when all the new female champions were like all used to be guys.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I just think it would demotivate the majority of people that are women and want to continue to be a woman and play sport. They'd be demotivated. I feel like, oh, I can't win. In the same way, I'm super demotivated to play basketball. I'm like, I'm just like not black enough. And I know that.
That's not it, bro. You're half black. You're like a lot more black than me. You ain't tall enough.
If you think about it, I think most sprinters, just you know, if you're white and you want to get into sprinting, you're probably just super demotivated. You just look at the Olympics each year and you're like, ah, it's got a feeling it's not for me.
Yeah. I think there's got to be some rule about the level you played at as a guy and then the level you're planning to play at. Yeah. Because it's like, all right, I used to be, it's like Matt Kroc, right? Yeah. I used to be like world record champion going into female. You're like, all right, fucking serious advantage here.
It's almost like you can compete as one sport. Like international sport, often you can only compete for one country.
Yeah.
You can't swap countries even if you change citizenship.
Yeah. It's just like, look, you were too high level at this sport as a male. Unfortunately, that disqualifies you from competing at that level as female.
Yeah,
you can play weekend warrior sport, but you're too high level now. Like, imagine if fucking John Jones is like, nah, I want a sex change. Put me in the women's heavyweight division. Even if he dropped all that weight to get down there, he would be killing people. You know what I mean? It's scary. And same would go for rugby, right?
You don't want to see mediocre men winning gold.
Nah. Yeah. So, I think it's just like the level that you played at should come into it. Anyway, interesting stuff. All right. Before we get into the listener questions this week, one thing, you know, put a really positive spin on this last section. I am so pumped about this. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before, but we are rolling out electric buses in Sydney. There are a few electric buses that have made it into the rotation.
Oh, you've gone on one?
No, I haven't gone on one, but I've seen them. Incredible. They are so quiet.
Well, you know I refuse to get on a bus, but this could bring me back.
No, dude, this. Dead quiet. Really? You wouldn't, if you stepped out onto the road and you're listening to podcasts, you wouldn't hear it. You know how buses are so loud.
That sounds dangerous.
Buses are so loud. It's kind of dangerous. The loudest part of the bus is the air, you know, they make the air pressure, when the doors open. That's the only thing you can hear.
Wow.
And so when it takes off, completely silent. Because you know buses are so loud, right? That's the one thing. Obviously, they're dirty, like you can smell them, but also they're so loud. gone. It's actually incredible. I mean, electric cars, one thing, but cars aren't always that loud and obnoxious, and they don't smell really bad, unless it's a really old, shitty car, right? But most cars, it's not bothering you. You're not like, oh man, that car's so loud, it stinks. Like, every bus is like that, right? So loud and it stinks. And this green bus, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
It's going to be incredible. I think they should program those buses to drive straight over those motorbikes that maintain incredibly loud noises.
Oh, like the Harleys and stuff.
I assume where this is going is that there'll be almost no sound on the street. You could have a house right next to a highway.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even be bothered.
No.
Right? So it'd probably even change the whole property market.
Yeah. No, it would. It would.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
That's like the main reason you can't live near like a really high road rise.
Yeah.
You can't sleep at night.
Yeah.
If that was all gone, incredible. And I think as they roll this out, they should just crack the fuck down on really loud motorcycles.
Yeah, well, some people.
Man, you can have a motorcycle that makes... There's electric motorcycles,
you'd be cracking
right?
down on male egos everywhere, though.
Right. So. Just put headphones on and play the sound in your ears.
Well, that's what electric cars do. But what I love about it so much is, obviously, with making a change to... Because obviously, we're trying to make the change with electric cars, but I think we'll make a bigger impact with electric buses. And that's because with buses, there's one entity that controls all the buses, and the buses run on a schedule every single time, so the amount of emissions that they put out every single time is fixed, because you know, right? Because the buses will run no matter what. If it's on the timetable, it's coming, right? Whereas cars, every entity that runs the car is different. Every household is different. The schedules can change. We can park it for a week, it needs to get serviced, I'm going to walk now, I'm getting into biking. All these things change, right? And to get every single entity to make the change over to green energy and to electric takes time. Because everyone's got their own beliefs, everyone's got their own systems, their own budgets. But with the buses, you only have to change one, you only have to make one decision. And the decision now is, let's move the whole fleet over to green. So, and it's a fixed amount of emissions. And buses produce way more emissions than a car ever will, right? So,
yeah.
You got to think to yourself, if you can move all that over in one clean swoop, you're making dramatic difference on the quality of, well, sound, obviously, is a big thing.
Sound pollution, air pollution.
Everything, right? So it's such a... I'm so excited for it. And there's a couple of these rolling out, and I'm like, this is the future. This is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so... I'm pumped for it. Anyway, all right, we'll get into the listener questions.
Does it have, like, the braking and shit like a Tesla?
What do you mean?
Is it... It's not, like, auto-driving or anything like that. It's just electric. No.
Yeah, just electric.
Still got the bus driver driving.
Yeah.
It hasn't got, like, the crazy shit.
Well, it could be. I don't know. They're just not using it.
Mm.
Anyway, guys, before we get into this... before we get into the listener questions... we've started using the True Protein. We talked about it last week. They've got the electrolyte and the fuel, right? So they've got these two new products. Highly recommend using them. So if you find you drink a lot of water, but you're constantly thirsty throughout the day, likely what is happening is you do not have the electrolyte balance that you need to absorb the water that you need. You actually need less water than you think. What you need is a proper balance of electrolytes. So getting a solution like this, the true electrolyte balance, will sort you out. Put a little bit of teaspoon in the morning, drink your water. That should help to rebalance the amount of electrolytes you need in your body, so that when you do drink water throughout the day, you will absorb it properly. And you'll feel like you need less. You won't feel like, I'm drinking water all day, I'm peeing, but I'm constantly thirsty. And that's a horrible place to get. So check that out. And then if you are into some more endurance sports, we've been trying out the True Fuel, which I've been enjoying a lot. And yeah, it is really good. It's an important thing to have by your side. If you're getting out there for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, running, cycling, potentially even swimming, if you're doing some more endurance stuff.
Or even like a double day. Back when I was doing double days, I know this would be good.
Yeah. And if you're a heavy sweater, this is absolute necessity for you guys. So make sure you check it out. You can go to themymuscleproject.com/trueprotein to check out those products. And then America, if you're listening to this, which I know you are, you can get free shipping to the US. Free shipping? Yeah, you get shipping to the US. So make sure you check it out. Again, themymuscleproject.com/trueprotein for our code. And yeah, make sure you get it.
Yeah,
get it out
you can get free shipping. You've got to order enough. I think it's like $150, something like that.
Yeah.
Aussie.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Okay, plant-based China. Ours. I feel like I already know so much about you. Vegan in China. What are your thoughts on overtraining for one heavy session, knowing you'll be sore afterwards if you know you won't be able to get to the gym for 3 to 4 days?
Yeah, this is... I think it's, a lot of people have this question.
I've done this so many times.
Yeah, they know, okay, I'm about to go traveling or whatever, I'm going on holiday.
Here's the mistake I always make, which is I'm like, okay, I'm going on holidays, I'm going to just destroy myself in the gym. But I always do that right before the holiday, as in like the day I'm leaving.
Oh, okay.
And then I go and I'm either flying and I'm sitting down on a plane or I'm sitting down in a car for a really long drive.
Yeah.
And it's almost always goes so bad for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting on the plane, cramping my quad, cramping my hamstring, my back is hurting. So I did like 30 deadlifts and now I can't move my shoulders. Like I've done this so many times that now it's like a rule. I cannot do like a massive session of contractions, like tons of lifting before a trip. Because even though this sounds good in theory, almost always goes terribly for
me. Yeah, because you've got to be still while you're traveling, right?
So bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So from in that context, it's not good. But I think if you're not going to be at the gym for 3 to 4 days and you're going to train really heavy, I just think you don't have enough tools in the toolbox to stimulate the area or the training that you need to maintain what you need to over the next 3 to 4 days.
Exactly.
If you feel like, oh man, but I need to get my like heavy squats in. I'm like, if you learn how to pistol squat, you know, and you like, who can't find a little bit of weight for a pistol squat? Who can't find 5 kilos? You're traveling, you got some luggage, hold on to a bag, do a 5 kilo pistol squat. It's super hard. That is going to maintain your strength. Even if you lose a little bit, you get it back in 3 or 4 days. 3 or 4 days is nothing. So I really think it's just like, you don't have enough tools in the tool belt right now. And yeah, I wouldn't recommend crushing yourself, obliterating yourself or, you know, because you won't make it to the gym for 3 or 4 days. Just not a very productive way to go about things. Just like, oh, I'm going to take a break here. Better smash myself. I just don't think it's very very intelligent.
Yeah, it works out. But I think you're also discounting how good you can do training with minimal equipment.
Yeah.
You're looking at this like, oh, I can't train.
Yeah.
It's probably unlikely.
Yeah. Surely you can do something.
You can do something.
Yeah. Even if you're on a plane, you can do pistol squats on a plane. Yeah, you look like an idiot, but you can do it. So there isn't really an excuse ever. And if training is that important to you, then yeah, you'll always find a way.
Yeah. Beck Athlete, best advice tips for moving your gym to a larger space. I've well and truly outgrown my space and I can afford to move to a larger space. But what haven't I thought of that could catch me off guard?
We actually did an episode on this a few weeks ago on In the Black. So probably worth checking that out. I'd say, what was it? I think it was like the 10 things you're not considering about starting a gym. I think that's probably what it was.
Man, there's a ton here. A few come to my mind straight away that we've talked about. It's like, one, I think just the actual moving often just costs way more and is way more hassle and everything is more than what you were thinking. Might take you longer, probably going to be more expensive. All of those issues, generally like 30-40% worse. I think that probably what you've already planned if you've never done this before. Number two, I find that maybe have you really thought through why you need a bigger space? Often people like really think they need a bigger space, but they really don't need a bit of space. Maybe they just need to do more with what they've got. Maybe they need to add an online component to the business. You know, it's not the only way to keep improving your business is just by increasing how much rent you pay.
Yeah.
You know, which is one. That's another one. And then, yeah, I would say is that we talked about on the show was you got to consider then, so maybe you've got, you know, 30 clients and you're working them in a small space and you're going to move to a bigger space. To make, you know, the same money and make it as good a business, you might need like 50, 60 clients now. Okay, instead of signing up 2 or 3 a month, you've got to sign up 6 or 7 a month. You know, are you definitely going to be able to sign up double plus as many clients? Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, if you definitely know that, you know, I'd like to know how you know that for sure as one. And if you need to be 100% confident. Otherwise, you're really exposing yourself to have a much worse business and a higher risk business as well.
Yeah.
So I would say those three straight away is just like, yeah, it's going to be more expensive than you think. Do you really need a space to improve your business? And are you certain you are going to have the inflow of new clients to make this new business successful?
Yeah. And I think some people think that bigger is better, whereas sometimes better is just better. So potentially there are some things with your space right now that if you are considering moving, you may want to find a space that's similar size so like you can avoid some of the issues you talked about, like increasing your sales numbers, obviously increasing the number of staff that you would need. And potentially move to a better space. So that would be a space with maybe more street exposure, maybe with better parking, maybe you get some noise complaints. Maybe it's like a better laid out space. Maybe you'll have the same number of clients, but they'll feel like they have more space.
And you can charge them more.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say, is like then you can pull the lever of like, hey guys, we're moving. It's a more premium space. It's nicer. Everyone's membership's going up 10% or whatever, right? So there are other ways to do it. You can rejig the model so that you can have, you know, classes run on the half hour and move them to different sections of the gym. And that way you can get more people by in a smaller space. It's interesting because Ev's going through it right now, right? They're looking for a bigger space. And, you know, it's not my place to give them advice on what to do, except just kind of ask and listen. But yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, bigger is not always necessarily better. In their case, they need a better space because the space they're in right now isn't to the standard they want it to. But I think it's, yeah, people always think that going bigger is better. And quite often it creates more headaches that you
often
weren't
as well,
expecting.
Man, I don't know, personally, I find as a client, I usually don't enjoy a bigger gym.
Mm. The atmosphere?
Yeah, you get in a massive gym, you're like writing fucking letters to the person on the other side of the gym. Like, it's not as enjoyable. It's just
well, it depends
gym.
On how big she's talking about.
Yeah, but like, you know, you get a, I don't know, like those massive CrossFit gyms.
Yeah.
I don't like them as much.
Yeah.
The atmosphere sucks.
Yeah.
You know, you can barely see the other person. You like get your plate. It's like half a run to the other side of it. I don't know. It's not always better.
Yeah.
You might just look
more
impressive
cleaning.
On a photo. Way more cleaning.
Way more cleaning.
Exponentially more cleaning. So yeah, it's just not always the better option. I would like really be thinking through this if I was Beck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've gone on about this for ages, but yeah, probably last thing I'll leave you with to think about is, one, the bigger you get, the more staff you're likely going to need. And if you're invested, if you're kind of owner-operator, if you're on the floor working a lot, what you have to realize is the next evolution, the next leveling up of becoming a gym owner is taking yourself off the floor almost 100% and building a team. And that requires leadership skills. And that's something that we had to develop as things that, you know, no one's ever going to appoint you the leader. But look, if you're running the show and you're hiring staff, that's the title you have. You're a leader. You need to guide your team. You need to create a vision, a mission, a purpose. You need to set outlines, goals, KPIs. You need to manage your team. You need HR. You need employment contracts. You need all these things that maybe if you are the owner operator, and I don't know, maybe you have all this stuff. But if you don't, this is now the next level at which you have to understand. And, you know, it becomes about your people. It becomes about how good of a team that you can grow and manage. And if that's something that scares you but excites you, probably do it. But if it scares you and you don't want to do anything like that, you don't want to manage people, you always want to be on the floor, then I probably would move to a bigger space where you need more staff.
And listen to In the Black.
Yes.
Jenna Bucks, what are effective single leg unilateral accessory exercises for someone who has knee pain? She lists some example. Lunges, weighted box step ups irritate the person's knee. I'm almost certain you're talking about yourself, but you're making it sound like you're talking about someone else.
Could be one of our clients. So if just getting rid of knee pain is the goal, it doesn't always have to be single leg stuff. It can be loads of stuff. It shouldn't be, okay, what are the single leg exercises? I guess if it's knee pain on one side, then yeah, you're obviously going to work on one leg, but not necessarily. But, you know, first of all, the knees over toes system is really good. We use that. The first stage in that system is the reverse walking, the reverse way to walking. So it's like reverse walking up the hill, reverse sled drags. You could
do
be
band resisted.
Yeah.
Like hold a band, someone holds the other end of the band.
Yeah. Yeah. Reverse deadmills, which is like a treadmill that you don't turn. It'd have to be an electric treadmill.
Yeah.
Where you don't turn it on and you're just kind of like walking backwards. Basically, what you're trying to do is get lots of small quad contractions as you push through. And it's better than just doing leg extensions because essentially you're just getting the concentric contraction, which is just the squeeze. And you get that ability to kind of push through the toe and then roll through to the heel, which is like obviously a more natural movement. So I would start there to kind of bring down some of the knee pain. And then you've got loads of different variations on it. You've got the reverse step up. So that's kind of just that step up where you're on like, say, a ledge or a couple of plates, and then you're just kind of bending at the knee, resting the heel on the floor and stepping back up. Kind of hard to describe. But if you're on the Knees Over Toes page or Knees Over Toes guy on Instagram, he's got all those kind of exercise variations on there. That's a great resource. And I would start there. But yeah, you need to do stuff that takes you out of pain, and you need to stop doing stuff that causes pain.
Yeah, and I would add, very often here as well, you just get really bad foot stability. So if lunges, weighted box, step-ups, irritating, might be just because their foot mechanics suck. So those exercises are pretty advanced, particularly if your foot stability is bad. So every time they do it, it's going to irritate their knee. So doing exercises that are going to improve their foot stability. So that could just be like balancing on one leg, you know, in like a 1/8 or quarter squat sort of position, and starting to challenge that single leg stance with like more and more complex movements, even like single leg deadlifts, stuff like that, single leg box squats, improving that, then going back to the lunges and the weighted box step ups, so they have just a better, you know, contact with the ground, which is going to travel up to the knee and the hip.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. Okay.
Last question. Ryan O'Hagra. So he's been a big fan of Applying Oxygen Advantage. So that was
Patrick McEwen.
Yep, who we've had on the show twice. Breathe light to breathe right. I don't know if he says that, but he put it in quotation marks.
Okay.
In my cardio, but struggle to apply it to my resistance training. It seems to throw out his rhythm on the reps. Should I be sticking to the common inhale-exhale rhythm that goes with lowering and lifting the weight? I have found exhaling through the nose when really exerting feels like my eyes want to pop out. Any advice on oxygen advantage breathing for weights would be awesome.
That's a good question. Pretty specific. Yeah. The idea of the nasal breathing stuff is that you're just doing it most of the time, the majority of your day, which you should be. So in the small periods of time that you're lifting weights, it's okay to just, you want the most optimal breathing for the context. And the most optimal breathing for the context of lifting weights is not nose breathing. It's taking a big breath in and then, yeah, exhaling hard during the rep, during the concentric part of the rep. So on a bench press, breathe in, hold the breath, lower it. And then as you're pressing up, drive, breathe out. And that'll be breathing out through your mouth, right? Because you've got to release a lot of air.
Nearly everyone exhales through the mouth.
Yeah.
And then you can just let it go much faster.
Yeah. And then if you're being really strict, what's the optimal breathing after that? Well, you probably just do some nose breathing. Yeah. Just breathe through your nose, just recover. But don't be so strict on it that it's like so black and white.
He didn't write that book to lift heavy weights.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not what he was thinking. Yeah. Nearly everyone exhales out through the mouth because you can exhale faster. And it sounds like you just can't exhale fast enough. It's like your eyes are popping out of your head.
Yeah.
But most people do breathe in through the nose, all through nose and mouth before the lift, just because you can like access more your lower diaphragm and usually get a bit tighter from that. So I wouldn't recommend just mouth breathing throughout the whole thing. But I definitely wouldn't be worrying that much about how the air comes out of your body, you know, as you're lifting the weight.
Yeah. What is optimal for you lifting weights?
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. Like what allows you to brace the tightest, create the most force most comfortably. That is your answer. Cool. Okay. Good question though. All right, last thing, guys. If you're listening to this right now and you are doing some of the project programming, you for the end of this month. Oh, no, it's over now. No, it is over. So it's... Oh, no, is it for April? Connor, we for April?
Phase two,
April. All right, so if you... Actually, some of you guys didn't know this, but there is a second phase on any of the programs. So say you get through the 8 weeks of Body, Strong, and Fitness, and you're like, I really love that, but what do I do? Do I do it again? Well, it's actually a phase two. So in the app, in your emails, once you get to the final week in week 8, we open up a phase 2. That's a 12-week phase. And it's going to be very different to the first phase you did. It's a lot more advanced. It's going to be some different exercises, lots of different progressions, different rep ranges. Really exciting stuff. So it almost feels like you're doing a completely different program. Anyway, phase 2 is going to be 30% off in April. So if you guys go to themymuscleproject.com/phase2, so P-H-A-S-E, 2, the letter 2, sorry, the number 2, one word, you will get access to any of those programs. Potentially, you just want to start on a phase 2 of something else. You can try that as well. You don't have to do phase 1 to buy phase 2, but it is 4 weeks longer, so it's got an extra cycle in there, and that is 30% off for the month of April. So make sure you guys go check that out. Again, our website /phase2, and you can check it out there. Okay, now we do have, I have watched Seaspiracy. However, we do want to talk about it next week because Raph hasn't watched it, but I think it's one of those ones that we both need to watch and discuss. So we'll leave that for next week.
Man, it was, I didn't realize this. It was from the same team that did Cowspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
pro. They need to get more creative with their names.
It's a pro vegan.
And it's backed by Leonardo DiCaprio.
Also a vegan. So
is that true? He's vegan.
Yeah, like he's behind the Beyond Meat. He's invested in Beyond Meat.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So we will have thoughts, we will have comments, we will spend a bit of time discussing it next week. So make sure if you haven't seen Seaspiracy, that is your homework for us.
Oh, hold on here, bro. Well, celebrity answers. He continues to eat meat, although preaching the wonders of veganism.
Yeah.
That's what it says about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Fucking Liam is a joke. Okay, so he's the wolf, bro. He's the wolf of Wall Street. He doesn't listen to rules. So that's your homework for us. Watch Seaspiracy. But for this week, what I'll leave you with is a review on a sock company. So I'm big on socks in terms of where other people might not be as big on socks. I like a good crew sock, so something that that shows out of the shoe. However, what I've struggled with over the last, I'm past the phase of caring about what they look like. As long as if they're black or white, that's good. I'm happy. They don't need to be like super fancy. I went through my Stan sock phase. I'm over that shit. I just want something simple. Something clean, something that looks professional when, you know, I'm around clients and stuff. However, what I've really struggled with, except for Nike, okay, every other sock except for Nike, the toe box is too tight. So like the toe box, what I find with all these other socks is it's like the sock is compressing my toes. And if I'm wearing them all day, it starts to annoy me. I start to feel, and I know because the toe, the second toe from the inside, whatever that's called, the ring toe, it gets a little bit numb. Like it gets a little bit, yeah, it loses a bit of feeling. And that is fucking annoying. I hate that. And so I need a looser toe box. For whatever reason, Nike designed their everyday sock to be looser in the toe box. So it's good. But the Nike everyday sock is not really a performance sock. That's the problem. So I wanted something, I wanted two things. I wanted something that's comfortable to wear all day with a looser toe box, but it has more performance material so that when I'm doing a few workouts in it in the day, it doesn't get really sloppy and like, you know, wet. It doesn't look sloppy, but it just, it wears your socks out faster if it's not, you know, dry fit material. And like all the dry fit stuff, they're there extra tight around the feet, right? Because they're expecting you just go for a run. But it's like, there's no reason why I can't have like a looser toe box with a dry fitting sock. It just doesn't make sense. So this one company I tried, which I thought had solved this, was Features. So F-E-E-T, so like feet, foot, Features. And they're an American company. I listened to a YouTuber who's a runner recommend them, and I thought they were quite good. I've worn them a few times. They're very comfortable. However, they've started peeling already without even the first wash. And I was very disappointed that they started peeling already. Only really cheap shit socks peel on the first wear. So I don't know why he recommended them. He's definitely not sponsored by them, and he definitely makes plenty of money that he doesn't need any sponsorships. But he raved about them as if they were really good, and I wasn't super pumped with the result there. So
they sell it hard on the website.
They do, which is, I don't know, maybe it's the Australian ones that we get access to, because obviously the American site has way more socks. And they also didn't...
All the socks that suck that I just sent to Australia.
They also didn't have the loose toe box. So right, they failed. That's disappointing. They didn't have the thing. So he was like, yeah, they're super comfortable. They're great for running. I can wear them all day. I'm like, oh, it sounds like they might have a loose
toe. Were they expensive socks?
Not overly priced. Right. No, not overly priced. I mean, it's like $30 like maybe a performance pair or something. And if I'm like, I'll pay $30 for a really good pair of socks that will last a long time. I can train in them. They're comfortable. Nah, didn't work. And they started peeling.
That's really disappointing.
Yeah, like right where the shoe is rubbing on it, it's peeled straight away. And it's supposed to be performance socks. So I was very disappointed. I'm going to get 1 out of 5. Yeah, I was very disappointed.
So I'm looking on Amazon.
Fucking
here.
Suck features.
And you're it's got a lot of people that like it, but there are a lot of people that say like things didn't go well after the first wearing.
Yeah, no, it's super average. Super average. Suck.
Disappointing.
Okay. Right. No, now you've been warned. All right, and now you know it's an unpaid review, because we fucking will roast people when they're shit. If you have other products that you think you want to put trial by fire, if it's your product, if it's someone else you know, if you actually know good socks, let me know so I put them through the gauntlet. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Thank you for tuning in. We'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.